Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and we have a great group as we always do, so let me introduce them, and they're ready to go. I know you are as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Taking a cue from our listeners yesterday, we are going to see how long we can go without mentioning the T word. we're gonna see. At some point we'll get to it, but for right now we're just going to see how long we can forge ahead. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning,
Mr. and Mrs. T.
Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. T. Right, absolutely right. The legislative director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, Blair Horner, is back with us, and we couldn't be more delighted. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to all.
Very nice to have you there here. And
well, I am there.
You're there.
I will
and you're
be here.
Here, yes. Mike Spain is back with us, of course, as he is each and every Tuesday, the Times Union Associate Editor. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us. You know what? We have all kinds of things to talk about, and I sent out a bunch of articles and everything, but I feel with Blair here and certainly with Mike and Alan that I should ask about what's going on in New York State right now, and is anything going to get done, and are they done, or what's going on?
Well, this would be bad radio, right? Because it would just have to be a moment of silence as we try to come up with what exactly is going to happen.
So, you know, the legislature, they're in session,
yes,
right?
Yes, they have 14 working days to go.
Okay.
The middle of June.
Okay, so many of us, when we go to do something, we have that list of things that we want to accomplish. So we assume they have that list.
Yes.
What will they check off the list in those 14 days?
Well, there's going to be hundreds of bills that pass in both houses. I mean, a lot of them are bills that we wouldn't recognize, things like, you know, changing a pension to a widow or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, lots of those. In terms of the big picture items, I think the biggest one that we'll see how it plays out is going to be these specific tax abatement program for New York City that's been jammed up as a result of the various scandals. It's called the 421A program, which gives benefits to real estate developers to build housing in New York City, particularly in Manhattan. And that issue is tied up. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of debate over it. The unions want prevailing wages. The tenant advocates want expansion on rent control. To me, that seems like one of the big topics at the end of session. But you notice I didn't use the E word.
Yes.
Because, you know, at the moment, that is the sound of silence. The sounds of silence are coming from the reform side of the equation. Despite sort of unbelievable numbers of scandals, the sentencing of the former legislative leaders, the swirling controversy around the governor and his former top aides, all of that stuff, despite all of that, it's the sounds of silence.
And now we have, Blair, I read in the paper this morning that we now have the Supreme Court considering whether or not corruption laws have gone too far, which and it could be that as a result of that, that everybody, as we used to say when we were playing, ollie ollie income free. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, this is a great segue back to our first topic. But the Supreme Court is ruling on a case dealing with a Virginia governor who was convicted of corruption for accepting gifts in circumstances that the courts had ruled were illegal. Again, in that case, a theft of honest service. And in what may turn out to be a parallel to former Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno's case, the U.S. Supreme Court could end up rolling that back, although with a 4-4 deadlock on many issues, who knows what the U.S. Supreme Court will do.
Right.
So I have to ask, since the three of you are three men in a room, if you will.
Joe. You count, Joe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask the question, though. I got to ask the question, which is, in all of your experience, this is much more a feature question than it is a news question. But in all of your years here, and I ask this to the three of you, I mean, is this the worst we have seen, or is this just a continuation of the saga of you reap what you sow?
So is this a lightning round?
Yeah.
All right. Worst. Alan.
It's the worst we have seen, but that doesn't mean it's not the worst that has been.
That's a great point. Yeah.
If there was a pre-Barrara around for the last 30 or 40 years, God knows what would be going on.
Right. We've seen some terrible corruption. I've been teaching, of course, for, 50 years or so, I hate to say it. But the message has always been the same. This is terrible what's going on up there.
Well,
parents, I'm sorry, Mike, yeah, and sure. What do your parents, I say to the students, think about the politicians in Albany? And they always say the same thing. They're all a bunch of crooks.
Well, that has always been the answer because people are cynical about government. But
for good
I
reason.
Think what makes this the worst period that I can recall in the 40 years I've been around as a journalist is that it is so obvious that there's so much wrong. It's in everybody's face. The litany that Blair just read off, it's that the two leaders of the legislature were sentenced in the last few weeks. We have all this new round of subpoenas questioning the ethical relationship between top former Cuomo aides and companies that do business with the state. And there's a lot more swirling around. And nothing is happening. So it's in the face. It's now out on the surface. It's not buried like it was in the past.
Right.
It's out on the surface. There's no question that there's all kinds of problems, and nobody's doing anything, and they can.
And they still have the unmitigated gall, otherwise known as chutzpah, to ignore it. I was talking to an assemblyman the other day, and he thought we had the solution, which is, yes, there should be a limitation on outside salaries for these guys, which is how they always rip it off. But it should be, we think the public will go for it, very reasonable, 70% on the outside, 70% of what the judges in the state make. Look, Boss Hastie is going to have to front for these guys on this, and he's not going to do it. He's just not going to do it.
At the moment, it's the pre-Barrara parade, and the ticker tapes are subpoenas flying down from the buildings in the courthouse. Ultimately, that's what's going to drive the train on this stuff. The governor's nowhere to be found.
You get subpoenaed, and obviously they want information, and all of that takes time, and you have to compile all of this stuff. So in a realistic sense, can you get anything done? And then in a more practical sense, shouldn't you at least be talking about cleaning up the mess around you?
Yes, of course, right? This is the problem. The governor and the legislators get sent to Albany to solve problems. 97% within the margin of error of New Yorkers think there's a huge problem, and they're not going to do anything about it. So it's like amazing.
That could be 101%,
Now, that being said, it's 14 working days for the rest of us who deal with the normal calendar. That's a month. During that period of time, something may come together. But at the moment,
is there anything that you believe that could come together where there are pieces of something that would be meaningful?
Well, of course, I'm the NYPRG guy, right? So I'm Mr. Optimist.
I think the answer to that is yes. The question is, what they'll do only what they think they have to do.
The LLC loophole, which allows you to set up all these dummy corporations and give unlimited money to your campaign, the people you want to support. Campaigns. Now, what happened to that, Blair? Wasn't that close to getting some action in the Senate?
I don't think so. I think the votes are there. If it ever makes its way to the floor, but the Senate Majority Leader has done everything he can to jam that thing.
They're
going to
say,
I
don't want to do that. A two-year-old, I don't want to do it,
moment,
and I'm not going to do it.
That's right. At the moment, I think their muscle memory would be to cobble together a lot of little things, none of which have anything to do with the scandals. Try to make it a big bill of maybe 100 pages long with lots of little things in it, and say they passed a 100-page ethics bill, and it fundamentally won't change anything. So I think if they do anything, that's sort of what we're looking at. If they want to do anything real, they're going to have to tackle big problems. And they haven't done anything in terms of laying the groundwork. No hearings. The governor hasn't barnstormed the state. They haven't done anything that would crystallize what should be done. We have our recommendations. But that's the biggest problem, is they're just frittering away the time. And so we will just be left with the visual image of a ticker tape parade going down Broadway in Manhattan, and except think of all the confetti as subpoenas.
And then when the legislature, so through that downtime, if you will, from the time that they come back in January, it'll just basically be picking up the pieces and see who is left standing at the end of the
year. The elections may end up driving the whole thing, right? I mean, there may be new legislators. If what we saw in this Dean Skelos seat, where the Democrats took that seat and the Democratic candidate ran as a reformer, if you see more of those kind of elections happening, then I think right now the calculation is there's more fear of the unknown than there is fear of the electorate. If they start fearing the electorate more in November, and they actually see the consequences of their inaction, they might be more interested in doing something come January. And we still wait for the confetti parade to finish up.
Well, but you know, November's a long way away, and it's June. You know, when they leave town, will people just forget that they failed to act? I mean, how can that stay in the forefront? Maybe these confetti, the confetti well, yield some indictments.
The U.S. Attorney's Office will continue to keep this. When he said stay tuned, he wasn't kidding, it turns out. And then the challengers are going to obviously use this as a weapon against the incumbents, and we'll see how it plays out. I mean, it's the end of the day, you know, we'll see what happens.
So two-part question. One, is the governor in real political trouble? Two, is the governor in real legal trouble?
Well, we don't know the answers to either at the moment. I mean, certainly on the political side.
I know we don't know definitively, but what do you think?
But the closest, I always hesitate to say what I know what a U.S. attorney's doing, right? There's no idea. But usually when this stuff starts to leak out, there is a fire in the smoke. We just don't know where it's burning. In terms of the governor's closest aide, I mean, for decades now, being the focus of this, the U.S. attorney's inquiry, wherever he's going, I mean, that could pose political problems for the governor, but sort of depends on the facts, and we don't know those yet.
Yeah, it all depends on how dumb the voting population is, I'll be honest with you. That's how dumb. I mean, why does Cuomo keep taking the lion's share? He can't win anything upstate, so he takes the lion's share of New York City and the burbs. Why? Because his name is Cuomo. That's why. His name is Cuomo. People think, yeah, that's Mario. Chip off the old block. You know, this is the son. I think that most people don't know a thing about state government. And, Glair, I'm here to tell you, as the keeper of this machine in front of me,
yeah, right.
I'm used to, if we mention the T word, we go, wah, 100,
right.
100 things. Yeah. I do not see a single letter.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
I don't know if it's a dumb issue or people just, I certainly don't think that. I just think people are cynical. They don't think anything real can happen. If they're right, that's the calculation of the elected officials, and it'll be left up to Barrara to turn Albany upside down.
So let me just, to what Alan was saying a moment ago about the distrust, especially upstate. So yesterday, I just want to get to this one more story, and then we'll move on to broader topics. But Carl Hastie says that there will not be hearings in Hoosick Falls, that they're not necessary yet. This having to do...
Why would he do that?
This having to do with the water issues in Hoosick Falls, which were, by all accounts, extremely serious.
Why would he do that? I mean, to me, the idea you have a hearing, and you have a hearing, you don't have to do anything, but you have a hearing.
Well, why would you have hearings? So only to examine the way the government has responded to a crisis, and to then from that draw, legislative action that would correct that if you identify flaws. If they, and for some reason, the Democrats in the Assembly do not want to have that hearing. You have Steve McLaughlin, a Republican upstate assemblyman, trying to hold his own hearings. You know, he's got the right idea. You should see what happened in Hoosick Falls. Why did it take so long for a response from state government? Was it appropriate? Do we have to change anything? And the leadership is not interested. Now, Chris Gibson, the congressman who is a lame duck congressman,
yes.
He's not seeking reelection, is calling for federal hearings, congressional hearings.
An investigation.
Right, into what happened in Hoosick Falls. And this may be another area that will cause great political pain to the current administration.
Now, meanwhile, also, I'm sorry, but the first thing that Hastie said yesterday in defense of this was that, oh, by the way, nobody from the governor's office told me not to hold hearings.
Right, I saw that.
Just want to make that clear.
The legislature's job is to monitor the executive branch. That's what you hold hearings for. And this is a mess. And so I'm just really, by the way, I throw the Senate in on this, too. That's their job, too. But the Assembly made, I guess, the public relations mistake of saying they would hold hearings and then not doing it.
Right. They're backing off. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. And so both houses have responsibility. There are people's health involved. It's not like somehow, you know, the roads are filled with potholes and so people have bent rims, which is a big problem, of course. But here's a situation where people's lives, their health was put at risk. And, you know, it appears, although we don't know from the reporting, great reporting, that shows that, you know, there people knew about this and they sat on it for a long time. People's health was at risk. No hearings? It's unbelievable. These guys really, it's this. We just talked about the ethics thing. This is why people don't write you any letters, Alan. They're just turned off. They cannot believe that this is what they get for their money.
97%, you mentioned, the people in the last
polls.
What?
Plus or minus.
97, maybe 101. Say they don't trust the legislature, don't like the legislature. And then we know that the polls that say, should there be term limits? Absolutely, there should be term limits. Should we, you know, I mean, one after another, these reforms, should there be an initiative and referendum so that we can vote on them? Of course there should. Why? Because people are sick and tired of these jokers acting in their own self-interest and not in the interest of the people. And it's that simple. I don't go along with you that it's only because they're so cynical that they're not moving. I think part of it is that they're also lazy.
The other explanation could be that they have come out all these years to vote and nothing changes, you know?
Yeah, they always vote for the incumbents, and that won't change in this election either.
Right. Well, I think we should all have the fundamental belief that elected officials should not come to Albany merely to loot the state treasury, and that the goal should actually be to improve
public policy.
Do we all agree on
that?
I always make this a better place. And if that's the case, we have to change the system.
I always say, should schmud.
All right. On should schmud, we're going to pause for a moment. We're going to get some news from the BBC. We will be back with Alan Chartok, Blair Horner, and Mike Spain. We welcome your letters as well. You really can write us on state issues. It's roundtable at wamc.org, roundtable at wamc.org. We will be right back. Amusingly, we were just going through our mail, and one of the things we were talking about, Alan often makes this point that it can be the tiniest little thing that you say that is you can have a 20-minute conversation about corruption in state government, nobody cares, but it's one little tiny thing that you say that everybody gloms onto. So we said that we would try to go through as much of the show as we could without saying the T word.
Right.
Well, then people don't know what we – then we're getting all these letters saying, well, what's the T word?
The T word is obvious. It's tushy.
It's the man who is the presumed nominee for the presidential nomination. We got into – everyone wrote to us yesterday and said, you're talking too much about that man. So I said, all right, well, then we'll try to do as much of the show as we can without talking about him.
Well, he's the presumed – look, let me go
we
back.
We are talking about him.
But we're not going to say that.
Not going to say that name.
Let's
see word.
Let's go back in history with some of the people who we would rather not remember, that who were really terrible. And inevitably, you hear people say, somebody should have talked about him. Somebody should have done something about him. Somebody should have exposed them. Somebody should have. But you know, I mean, look, whoever that guy is, he's the presumed nominee, and to ignore him is stupid. And by the way, I got a letter here that's from Peter who says, so far, Alan has called us stupid and lazy. Does he want to go for ugly and shiftless, too? Well, no, I don't really know you. But so I wouldn't do that. But
send us your photo.
I'm talking about the public
that's
in which
lovely.
You get a legislative election and a very small percentage come out and vote. And so I would say to Peter, you know, if you have voted, and if you have voted for the legislature and know one bill that one of them, you know, put up there, then I excuse you. Otherwise, join the group.
All right. So let's talk about the we have begun speaking around the Republican race. Let us talk about the Democratic race a little more directly. And that is the headline to the Los Angeles Times today. Hillary Clinton keeps losing. So how come she's winning? And it is curious, isn't it? At
no.
very least. No.
She look. in the I'm a Bernie voter, as we all know.
Yes, check.
But without, you know, the chorus, the chorus who support.
I would assume you would mean Libby Post, yes, and Rosemary Armeo, who are often here, who are...
They're not here to say this thing. But they always say the
Hillary,
same thing.
Hillary supporters.
She has gotten more votes.
That's right.
A lot more votes.
And she's gotten more delegates. A lot more delegates.
Well, and some super delegates. A lot more
super delegates. Well, that's the issue, of course, is the super delegates.
Well, I mean, but even, at, you know, looking at the LA Times reporting, they have her up in the number of in
actual
the number
votes.
of delegates, but taking out the superdelegates.
But she is she may not win. There are two primaries today. She may not win either of them.
That's right.
And the question is, okay, I understand the math part of this, but if you had told us, I mean, even you, nothing could have been predicted in this particular election cycle. But even a couple of weeks ago, had you said, okay, we're at a point where Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee and Hillary Clinton is still fighting, well, what does that say?
Well, I mean, clearly, this cannot help her candidacy to have to slug it out with Sanders all the way to the end. But she's within shouting distance already of wrapping it up. And the numbers in the reporting are that I guess Sanders would have to win 90% of the vote in the remaining primaries in order
like
to collect the number of delegates to overtake her lead. And so the reason why this did happen with Obama and Clinton. I mean, Clinton won a whole bunch of primaries, particularly at the end, but Obama had the lead. And so at the end of the day, that's the way it works.
Yes, but let's look at what's really going on here. Having been the recipient of many Bernieite letters here at WAMC, there is a passion among the people.
Bernieite?
Bernieites.
Okay.
They're feeling the burn.
Yeah. By the premise, by the gag.
Yeah. Right, I got it.
Yeah.
I just figured I'd underline it.
No. Who make it clear that they believe that we live in a screwed up, unfair and undemocratic and capitalistic system, which leaves them out. And when I try to argue that, okay, you know, there are choices to be made, I'm going to vote for Hillary. And they'll come back and say, never, never, ever. In the beginning, I was sort of resented it. And now I think it's a matter of passion. I think that the passion is that this is our chance to make our case that when Hillary takes the money, or when Hillary does the end with Bill of Glass-Steagall and all of the rest, this is just the same old, and they can't stand it.
So the official Bernie Sanders line is, you keep up the winning streak, you top it off with a big victory in California on June 7th, you have so much momentum that superdelegates will shift to him en masse, giving him the nomination at a contested convention in Philadelphia. How likely is that?
Not.
Okay.
That is not likely to happen because I talked to the congressman on the congressional corner and stuff. They love Hillary. They endorsed her from the very beginning. They put themselves out there with them. They're not with her. They're not going to change.
No, and he hasn't been a Democrat. He's been with the Democratic caucus, but he hasn't been a Democrat. The Oregon senator, one of the senators from Oregon, has come out in favor of Bernie Sanders. And that's the trouble. The whole system has been set up for the last 2 years to get Hillary Clinton to the White House. And this is an embarrassing wrinkle that's come along in the last few months where Bernie Sanders is getting 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people at these public events. And they are expressing exactly as Alan says. They're expressing passion, and they're not seeing that at the Hillary Clinton, not nearly to the level of that. You know, she has 2,240 delegates. You need 2,383. Right. But out of that, 524 are superdelegates. He's only got 40 superdelegates. Even if he was to pull some of them over, he still has a long, long reach.
And yet there are people on the other side, like Deborah, who has written us a letter, Joe,
yes,
who says, Senator Sanders is dangerously close to Nader territory. He's not a Democrat, and he's not concerned. That's just what you were talking about, Mike. Some of his folks are irrationally committed to an ideal that isn't well-defined. And Deborah has an interesting nuance here. She said some of his, now it may have been a typo, but a capital H, his folks, and she's not a his, she's a hers. You know what I mean?
Right.
Okay, so I thought I'd mention that. And then Chez says, please, we need people like Libby and Rosemary that are counter-conservative memes like those repeatedly spoken in advance by Rich Honan yesterday. His liberal, the war against success. Alan was asleep on the wheel at that one. Okay?
I thought you went after him quite forcefully.
I did, but it doesn't. Don't confuse people with the facts, please.
Okay, all right.
Please don't do that. You know, it just gets them upset. And Denise says, "When is Bernie Sanders going to shut down his Bernie or bust supporters who are issuing death threats against Democratic officials and behaving violently? Passion does not excuse thug-like behavior."
All right, so a variation of that question, kind of moving away from the thug stuff, but what is his obligation to this party that he has just recently joined to make sure that there is unity and not damage her short term, but certainly in the long term in the race in November.
Well, I don't know, but Karen has something to say.
Okay.
About this. Okay. Karen says, please, is it passion, underlined, that results in throwing chairs, whining, re-cheating, and death threats? HRC's voters were passionate in 2008, and there was none of this. Please, says Karen again.
This is in regards to what happened in Nevada.
Yeah.
At the delegate convention.
I don't know. Sanders will ultimately have to make that decision. Will he be the Ted Kennedy of 1980, or will he be the Hillary Clinton of 2008? I mean, ultimately, excellent. At the end of the day, yep, it's going to be if he's not the nominee, what does the party do to adapt to his perspective?
And we see something like that in the other party, where that very decision has to be made also.
That's right.
Right?
And that's a lot more difficult for a lot of conservative mainstream Republicans to come out in support of the presumptive nominee. In the Democratic Party, there still isn't that much difference between the philosophies and the political beliefs of Hillary Clinton and
Bernie
Sanders. Well,
I agree to some extent on the policies, but he calls himself a socialist, and Hillary does not. And I think there's something going on with younger Americans, adult Americans, who are identifying with an ideology in similar ways that maybe happened 10 or 15 years ago with libertarians among the Republicans who followed Ron Paul. And I think that may be what we're seeing here.
But we don't know when they come up the pipe whether they'll stick with it. I mean, I often say, we don't know whether when they have a job and they're making $100,000 a year, they're going to say what they're saying now when they don't have those assets. So
I think they'd be happy if they were making $100,000 a year. I think that's the big question, right? They're not sure that's going to happen.
But if they make $50,000
in debt for college.
But if they make $100,000 a year, do you think, under today's $100,000, by the way, because it won't be that then, do you think
adjusted
that there's still going to be changing ideologies?
No, I mean, it's an interesting cultural question. I mean, it's not just economics. It's about how you view sort of diversity in society.
Yeah.
It's about how you talk about and celebrate diversity in society. I mean, in a way, there's sort of a Western European sort of feeling to what Sanders talks about that seems to have a lot of appeal with young people. Who knows how it plays out in the future?
I just want to, there's one letter we got that was buried here, came out before the break, but said WAMC could do a great service and maybe win awards with a dedicated reporter covering Albany. They could shadow Jimmy Vielkind or Ken Levitt. Some recent grad must be available, and I think people want to know what's going on. We aren't lazy. There is just too much inertia in the current system and not enough info of what's really going on.
It's definitely our fault.
We don't have
Karen DeWitt. We don't have Dave Lucas.
We have the best Capitol reporter, I think. You all know, of course, Karen. She has won virtually every award there is for her working in the state capitol. And there is no one who covers that beat harder or better than Karen.
And what about the Capitol Connection? And what about all of the stuff that we do that no one else in the world
does? What about the first 20 minutes of today's program?
Give me a break.
Details, schmeetails, right?
Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to point that out.
Part of it is not just this particular station, right? It really is sort of the broader issue of while there has been more sort of blogosphere coverage to some extent of Albany, As newspapers have cut back and sure. TV stations have cut back their coverage. I mean, it's harder to find out what's going on. There's not the same sort of raging debate over state policy that you have at the national level where the T word can't get, like we can use the C word. We're talking about Cuomo, but we can't use the T word when we're talking about Washington.
I don't know. You know, I have to do this even though I don't want to. I have to compliment, you know, Mike, who is sitting with us here.
Yes, it's very difficult to be nice to Mike Spade. It's the hardest thing in the world.
I think the TU does a magnificent
they do.
Job.
Well, we're a capital. I mean, we are the capital region.
It's the industry, right?
Newspaper. It's our hometown government.
But you do a great job on this.
Well, thanks. But, I mean, I think it's a combined effort. I think there's been some great coverage, whether it's on the blogosphere, whether it's out of New York or even from Buffalo, there's been some great coverage of what's going on.
Buffalo News has been doing some great stuff.
But first you have to read the article once you put it out.
Well, that's it.
It's also bandwidth, right? If you're down in New York City where the political power of the state lies, you don't hear anything except for the mayor of the city of New York or national issues. You don't hear as much about the state issues. And so I think this has been a problem. By the way, it's been a problem forever. I think that's part of the reason why Albany's the state capital and not New York City.
But doesn't this also fall into that kind of whitewater situation where it's so complex, it's very difficult? I mean, I even think the media has a hard time kind of figuring out where all the money is. I mean, the old line, you know, follow the money. Well, God knows. I mean, it's
You'd
all
be running in several directions.
Right. Yeah. And it's that, just, by the way, is what Preet is doing right now with all these subpoenas. He is following the money.
But it's not a simple. I mean, in some ways, I guess probably the easiest one to explain was the silver. Where he set up this set this up, did this, did that.
Well,
the money went here.
Too.
Skelos was different. Yeah. Skelos, the reason he got less. We had one letter saying, "How come he got so much less than Shelley did?" The picture of Shelley is a venal one, whereas the picture of Skelos is, I was helping my crazy son.
Sort of like an organized crime boss.
Skelos?
Yeah. I mean, here he is basically shaking down people with business before him to hire his son in a no-show job. You're right. It's a more sympathetic picture. And the scale of the amount of money that was sort of stolen by the Skelos is maybe one-tenth of what Silver had done.
And it wasn't necessarily state money where...
It was a pathetic story. It really was. It was a pathetic story.
But still, at 70 years old, 5 years in the slammer, that's nothing to sneeze at.
No.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back and continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, plastic surgery dedicated to cosmetic surgery, laser treatments, and minimally invasive facial rejuvenation since 1996. Surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. CAPEK, plasticsurgery.com. Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries, adamsfarms.com. Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York, davidsonbrothers.com. And Waka Waka, offering solar-powered flashlights and phone chargers that provide light and power to people who don't have access to electricity. No batteries or outlets needed. Share the sun. Waka-Waka.com.
All right, we'll end with a case that is, I think Blair said this is the complex one that we'll work on. Justices seeking compromise have returned the contraception case to the lower courts. The Supreme Court, in an unsigned unanimous opinion, announced on Monday that it would not rule in a major case on access to contraception and instructed lower courts to consider whether a compromise was possible. The opinion is the latest indication that the Supreme Court, which currently has 8 members, is exploring every avenue to avoid 4-4 deadlocks, even if it does not decide the question the justices have agreed to address.
Well, that's true. Well, I mean, you know, this
yeah,
is
and
classic.
It could work. It could work anyway here. I mean, you know, if we had a liberal judge on the court, you know, I would feel better about it. But if we had another conservative on the court, I would not feel so good about it. So, frankly, based on what I'm seeing right now, I'll take it.
Well, and
even though the New York Times won't.
And in this particular case, again, the narrow issue of the case itself, where you have clearly split and where the Times describes it as the Supreme Court acting as mediator as compared to justice, that this may have worked out in this particular case, but it's really just another indication of this sort of the gridlock at the U.S. Supreme Court because the Senate is not willing to appoint a ninth justice.
I wonder if it's actually a way for the Supreme Court to say just that, that they're, you know, it's their way of expressing their disdain or their disappointment in the Congress not, or the Senate actually, not acting on the nomination of Merrick Garland and letting this seat go vacant for much too long. I mean, it's unless Garland is approved in the lame duck session after the election, let's say Hillary Clinton were to win the election
or the T word, whatever.
But if Garland gets nominated, or his nomination stays in place and it's not withdrawn and he gets approved after November, even then he'll just be sitting down with the next session. But if they wait for a new president to be in there, it could be next spring.
Right.
And we will have this kind of stalemate on the top court for another year, which is not good at all. Well, is that all you have to say, Alan?
A moment of reflection.
Well, no, I mean, you know, I still expect that Trump running for office is going to...
Oh, you said the word. You said it. That's all right.
So good. We're so close.
54 minutes.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I do apologize. And by the way, at 2 o'clock today, we'll be saying his name a lot more on Bob. but assuming that person, whoever that might be, you know,
he who shall not be named,
is going to be looking because he has a sort of directive way of looking at things that will please a constituency. I still believe he's going to name his Supreme Court nominees before he runs for office. So
Judge Judy,
he's going to get people. He's going to get people who will, frankly, bring Democrats into his over to his side. That's my bet.
Will John Miller be one of those?
No, maybe. He evidently.
That's an inside joke from Joe. Who John Miller is the tea man.
Yeah, right. I don't know how inside, but sure.
Right, but I mean, it is true that when he's talking about economists, this particular leading, you know, presumptive candidate for the GOP seems to pick economists that go on TV shows, and that's it. You know, he doesn't seem to know the breadth of economists. I mean, he's a TV guy.
And Chauncey Gardner.
Right. I watch television.
Yes. A great being there reference. Thank you.
Peter Sellers.
We're running out of time. I wanted to get something in there.
No, that's very good. Very astute. Do you want to get to some letters, Alan, as we close out our time together?
Okay, so there are so many letters. I've just gotten one from somebody named Stacy bawling us out for not reading her letter. But that could be multiplied maybe by 1,000.
Right.
There are people who really you have to understand that we do our best and we read them when they come in and we try to do our best. But so I believe that currently Bernie is about 280 pledged behind with the 900 delegates left. That means he needs 66% of the remainder to win the pledge delegate lead going into the convention. Commentary, anybody?
Well, that's quite a long. I mean, the rules are set up so that he can't get a winner take all. If there were winner take all primaries left, like California were that way, and it was at one time, and they made it different. They award them proportionately, and then when you add in the superdelegates, it's really slanted for the person that the party leadership wanted all along. And that's what he's up against.
Well, all right, somebody sent us a link. Don't be sending us a link. You know, I mean, make your comment, make it pithy. But don't be sending us a link. We don't want to see links. We're not opening up links around here. Jamie says, my belief is that Bernie supporters are not Democrats, but rather independents that have been caucusing with the Dems for years. Signed, Jimbo. And Dan says, did it ever occur to the roundtable that people are so busy trying to keep their heads above water to follow politics? People have seen corruption in New York for a very long time and thrown up their hands, and then we blame them. Profound. Well, it's it's a democracy,
right? You have a part in the system. You have a part to play.
Yeah, yeah. And did you vote? Did you vote? The fund drive is coming now, and people come up to me and say, we have too much time on the air with the fund drive. And I always say to them, did you put anything into the lockbox because you don't like the thing? And they go,
So how much is in that lockbox?
Let me tell you, Mike, we have $133,763
in the lockbox. Picking up. The pace is picking up.
Now, yesterday, we received great news that Alan broke yesterday afternoon that we have a challenge for $5,000.
That's a lot of money. Think about putting $5,000 in 20s into your wallet. Can't be done.
So we had just over $400,000 going into the last June fund.
We got to break that record.
So we're looking for $400,000.
And
we're at 133 now.
That's right.
And we have $5,000 that we'll get if we make that $400,000.
From our friend Tony Miola. Has a name. He loves the station.
Who often writes here on
wonderful,
our
wonderful
our
guy.
Round
wonderful
table.
Man. Yeah. That's a lot of money, folks.
So $5,000, and we also have the vote package. Blair, have you seen this? You vote for WAMC.
Isn't that something?
And it's a mug.
Stunning.
With a symbol of authority on the other side.
And then, look at the T-shirt here. Blair, I swear, when we get these, we'll give you one as your payment.
Yeah.
There you go. See, vote for WAMC.
Huge. Wow. It's huge.
It's very nice.
You walk around there.
It's beautiful. It's the most beautiful shirt I've ever seen.
We get in the elections.
Okay. So all of that going on, WAMC.org, and do what you can do and make that total grow. We will. We can certainly end the fund drive before it begins, but do what you can do today. That would be awesome. WAMC.org. Mike, Blair, Alan, thank you.
Thank you.
The roundtable continues after this.